Well, look at the parable of the dragnet in Matthew 13, and it's verses 47 to 50. There are some decisions in life that can wait because we don't need to make them now. When shall I retire? What age should I retire? I don't know. The long way away, that's all I know. I don't need to decide that now. It's decades away. Where should I go on holiday in 2020? I don't know. Maybe you're really good at planning ahead. I'm not thinking about when I'm going on holiday next year. Think about that later. But then there are some decisions you can't put off. What should I have for breakfast? Well, if you keep on putting off what you're going to have for breakfast, that window of opportunity closes, and whatever you decide to eat, it's actually lunch by that point. Now, there are some decisions, and the reason we get them wrong is they're the ones where we think we've got ages to make a decision, but we don't. Remember a couple of years back, planning to book tickets for a concert at St. David's Hall in Cardiff, and I think I actually checked as well, and there were plenty of tickets left. I thought, well, that's fine, that's plenty of time. Look back a couple of weeks later, go to book, and they've all sold out. It's our fault, we delayed, and they've all gone. Now, that was only a concert, so it didn't really matter. We were a bit disappointed, but imagine how awful that would be to do with a big decision. Imagine being offered a job that you've always wanted to do, and then suddenly, the day you're offered the job, you start getting cold feet, and you start thinking, oh, can I just have some more time to decide, please? And you keep on asking for more time, and then you phone up and say, yes, I'd like to take the job, please, and they say, well, no, sorry, we've got tired of waiting. We've offered it to someone else. Imagine delaying and delaying a big decision like that. Well, the point of the parable we're looking at this morning is to say we can't take that approach of delaying with the kingdom of heaven. Jesus is saying you cannot delay on this one. Now, firstly, let's just ask a question this morning. Is this parable the same as the parable of the wheat and the weeds? We looked at that parable a couple of weeks ago, and we read it again this morning, the parable of the tares, or the weeds. You find it back in it's verses 24 to 30, and then Jesus explains what it means in verse 37 to 43. They're very similar at first glance. So you have the wheat and the weeds all together in this field, and they grow up together, but then at the end there comes this day of harvest. The weeds are thrown into the fire, and the wheat is kept and put into barns. Well, the parable of the dragnet is very similar on lots of levels. Instead of a field, which is the world, you've got a sea instead. And instead of wheat and weeds, you've got fish. Good fish and bad fish. In other words, fish that you can eat, and stuff that you just chuck away because it's useless to humans. And then you've got that same moment. In fact, it's actually the same words that are used. Verse 42 to verse 50, and cast them into the furnace of fire. There will be wailing and gnashing of teeth. They both describe what's going to happen at the end on that day of judgment. So they're that similar. Why does Jesus tell this parable at all? Is he just repeating himself? And some people come to that conclusion here. In fact, one of my favourite Bible commentators is a man called William Hendrickson, and I regularly read what he has to say. I read what he said on this parable, and here's what he says about the parable of the dragnet. When it comes to the most important point, which is, what is the important lesson taught by this parable? There is nothing that is distinctive. Nothing that has not already been said. He says he is just repeating himself. Different parable, different picture, exactly the same message. And now, I know Mr. Hendrickson outstrips me in all sorts of ways in terms of knowledge and wisdom and experience, but I would want to humbly suggest Jesus is not just repeating himself here. And part of the reason I say that is because actually there's a very important principle behind all of this. Every part of the Bible has a unique contribution to make. There isn't a single sentence or word that you could just remove from the Bible without losing something. Every book of the Bible, if you were to not have that particular book, you would lose something that you just couldn't get in that particular shade or flavour in all the other books of the Bible. So I want to say there is something unique and different to the other, between these two parables. Well, parable of the wheat and the weeds. Remember, if you were here a couple of weeks ago when we studied that parable, what we said was that the main point of the parable is that final judgment is not going to come straight away. And the disciples needed to understand that there was going to be this period of delay. And they needed to know that because they'd heard, for example, John the Baptist crying out, saying, the axe is already there at the root of the trees, and it's there to chop it down. They've heard, the kingdom of heaven is at hand, it's ready to come, it's on its way. And in that parable, Jesus is teaching them that there is going to be this long period of time where the wheat and the weeds grow up together and the roots are entangled. He's describing there how the lives of believers are entangled in the lives of unbelievers. And the disciples needed to be prepared for just how difficult that was going to be. Imagine if that was Jesus' only parable about judgment, preparing for the day of judgment. Perhaps you can start to see the dangers of that already. People are going to say, okay, Jesus has said, yeah, he's going to come back, there's going to be this day of judgment, but he's also said there's going to be a long period of delay. Well, let's relax. Let's sort all this out nearer the time. I don't need to worry about all this Jesus business and this day of judgment for a long time yet. Well, I think that's why Jesus revisits this subject in the parable of the dragnet, to close that gap and say we mustn't think that way. Because Jesus says here, the kingdom of heaven is like a net that is closing in even now. And this isn't something we can postpone. This isn't an agenda item we can keep on rolling over to the next agenda, the next meeting again and again. Let's look then at the parable itself for the next few minutes. The parable itself is about a dragnet. You don't know what a dragnet is. You probably know what a net is, but you might not know what a dragnet is. And this is a particular type of fishing that you would that they would do in those days. And the way it would work is that you would often have people standing on the shore, but quite a long way apart. So you could easily have some people, in fact, multiple people on that side of the room, multiple people on that side as well, standing on the shore, and they'd cast this big net out, holding one end and the other end, and then they would pull it in, both pulling at the same time. And then having pulled it up onto the shore, so they're not using boats at all, perhaps, in some instances here. They'd sit on the shore then, they'd have two baskets or buckets, whatever, and they keep the fish that's worth keeping, and the rest gets chucked away. That's a dragnet that's being cast into the sea. Now, these disciples knew all about this, because lots of them, quite a few of them, were fishermen. He's describing something here that they would have done hundreds, probably thousands of times before in using a dragnet. But what we may not pick up on quite so easily is what a net, or in fact a dragnet in particular, represents in the Bible. So again and again, when you look at the Old Testament, a net is used as a terrifying image of swift and sudden judgment. I'm going to give you three Bible references from the Old Testament on that, but I could give you more. It's quite a common theme. So here's the first one. Habakkuk chapter 1, verse 15. It's one of the minor prophets, Habakkuk. Habakkuk 1, verse 15. He's talking there about how the Babylonians are going to come and attack Israel. They're the aggressors. They're coming to destroy. They're violent. They're determined. Now listen to what Habakkuk says they're going to do to the people of Israel. Habakkuk 1, verse 15. They, this is the Babylonians, they take up all of them with a hook, they catch them in their net, and gather them in their dragnet. You see the picture he's showing about the people of Israel. The Babylonians have their dragnet, and they are going to capture the Israelites, and no one is going to escape. Okay, second one, Ezekiel chapter 32, verse 3. Now, in this verse, God is speaking to Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. So Ezekiel 32, verse 3, "Thus says the Lord God, I will therefore spread my net over you with a company of many people, and they will draw you up into my net." Now, here he's describing the same sort of thing, but this time God is saying, it's my net. Yes, I might use people, but it's my net. I'm going to draw you into it. So he's talking to Pharaoh there. And here's the last one, Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 11 and 12. Now, if you know something about the book of Ecclesiastes, it's so full of description of people saying, in fact, what they're saying here is, life's not fair. Good things don't come to good people. Where's the justice? Where's the meaning to life? That's the context of these verses. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 11 and 12. "The race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favour to men of skill, but time and chance happen to them all." You see how he's saying there, you know, the fastest people don't win the race. The strongest people don't always win the battle. There's a sense of injustice, and time and chance happen to them all. He carries on. "For man also does not know his time. Like fish taken in a cruel net, like birds caught in a snare, so the sons of men are snared in an evil time when it falls suddenly upon them." See that, how that picture of the net is being used there. Like fish in a net. One minute they're swimming happily around, the next minute they're in the net, and it's too late. Nothing they can do. I could give you more Old Testament verses on this, but you get the picture. God is casting his dragnet and pulling it in, and there is no way of escape. A good picture of this in Finding Nemo. You've seen the film Finding Nemo. I know it's a children's film, but grown-ups can enjoy it too, and I'm sure plenty of you have seen it, where there's this huge fishing trawler that comes along, and Nemo is a cute little clownfish, just swimming happily in the sea, playing with his pals and all that sort of thing. And there's all these fish there, and the trawler lets down this net, and just in a moment, it's pulling it up, and the fish are suddenly swimming about, terrified. What do we do? They've been caught. They're in the net. Can you start to see now the difference between this parable and the parable of the wheat and the weeds? That in the wheat and the weeds, Jesus is explaining why he hasn't returned yet, why God is delaying this return. But now, in this parable, he's saying God's judgment is still imminent, sudden, unavoidable, and something we need to prepare for now. Well, that's the parable itself. Let's go through two lessons now. Here are the two main lessons that we need to see in this parable. Firstly, Jesus' disciples need to preach the gospel with urgency. We need to keep on reminding ourselves, because I think we naturally tend to forget this, that Jesus was teaching these parables first and foremost for his disciples, for their benefit. We read back in verse 36 how the crowd go away, and from that point on Jesus has been speaking privately to his disciples. And sometimes we jump too quickly to what does this say to people who don't know Jesus, but what did he want his disciples to know or to do as a result of this parable? Well, it's a parable that's emphasising that there are only two types of people. We talked about the good and the bad fish, and don't read anything about moral, you know, you don't get good moral fish and bad moral fish. It's just useful fish, fish we can eat. But the fish there are pictures in verse 49 of how the angels will come forward and separate, it says, the wicked from among the just. Again, don't read that and think, so good people go one way and bad people go the other way. It's actually, he talks about the just, people who are just. Actually, Jesus says again and again, no one is just in and of themselves. No one is righteous. But we need to be made righteous, given a righteousness from Jesus, a righteousness that's not our own. Whereas the wicked there is simply describing everyone who won't accept that gift from Jesus. That is the real act of wickedness in this world. Rebellion against God, refusal to come to him. So there's only two types of people. In the parable of the sower, Jesus has described four types of people. But in that parable, he's describing the different types of responses people can give to God's message. At the end of the day, though, two responses is all there really can be. You accept or you reject. You trust in Christ or we push him away and we refuse to bow the knee to him. Now, the disciples are people who have accepted that message. They've come to Jesus Christ. They've put their faith in him. But what's their main task going to be? Well, you read right at the end of Matthew, this command of Jesus to his disciples to go out into the whole world and make disciples of all nations. That's how the book of Matthew closes. They're going to spread across the globe and preach this message. Now, if they only had the parable of the wheat and the weeds, would they be preaching with any sense of urgency? I think it would be all too easy for them, because I know they're just humans like me, to think, well, it's a long way away. I got plenty of time. God's delaying. He's going to keep, surely it won't happen now. So what's the rush? Yeah, we'll make disciples of all nations, but we'll take our time on this. We'll keep on just kicking that can down the road a little bit further. And in the parable of the dragnet, it makes sure that we can't reach that conclusion, because the picture is actually the net. And in fact, it's not just that the net is closing in, it's there. It's there already. The fish sometimes can't see it yet, but that doesn't mean they're going to escape. It doesn't mean it's not there. And at any moment, those fish could be hauled out of the sea onto the land. These disciples need to remember, as they're going to go out preaching, travelling around to different places, that the person they're speaking to, the crowd in front of them, could be summoned to stand in front of God at any moment and face judgment. There are going to be times for those disciples when they're going to think, do I really want to get on that boat and travel to that far-flung place and preach about Jesus there? There'll be times when it's just going to feel very inconvenient. Times when they're going to feel very tired. Times when they can feel, to sort of persuade themselves, there's no rush here, is there? Times when people don't want to hear it and they can persuade themselves, okay, that's fine. Let's just forget about all this stuff. But Jesus says, look, remember the nets. Remember that picture of the net. There's a Puritan pastor called Richard Baxter. He spoke about preaching. He said this, preach as never sure to preach again, and as a dying man to dying men. Now, he's speaking there about preaching, but that includes every disciple of Jesus Christ, that sense of urgency, never sure to preach again. As a dying man to dying men. We lose our sense of urgency when we forget the net. And we gain a sense of urgency when we remember it. And we remember what he describes at the end of the parable, that there will be people who are taken and thrown into a furnace of fire. A place where people long to just dip their fingers in some water and put it on their tongue, and they can't even have that. A place Jesus describes as a place of outer darkness, a place of loneliness, a place of wailing, he says, but not wailing in a repentant way, wailing over their agony, a place where people grind their teeth together out of excruciating pain and frenzied anger, a place where people long even just for the pleasures they had in this world, where memories of their past lives will haunt them. And words can't describe this horror accurately. Jesus is saying to his disciples, remember the net. Remember the suddenness with which that fish can be scooped out of the water. That's the first lesson for his disciples. The disciples need to preach the gospel with a sense of urgency. And the second lesson is that broader lesson. Everyone needs to respond to the gospel with urgency. I was talking earlier about delaying decisions. There are some things we can delay. Some decisions we can do. I don't need to decide that now. I'll wait until closer to the time. And lots of people take that approach with Jesus. You know, I'm too young for that. I'll think about it later. It's for older people. I've got my whole life to sort that out. I'm going to grow up first. I'm going to go off to uni. I'm going to settle down. I'm going to get a job. I'll sort those things out later. And Jesus says, no, you don't have time for that. You need to follow me now. He says this by reminding us that everyone is in that net. And even though the fish don't see it coming, they're happily swimming around. Everyone is in his net. Jesus tells that story, a story about a man building up his empire, building bigger and bigger barns to store all the crops, all the wheat that he's growing. And he's entirely focused on that. And what Jesus says, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded of you. Now, I can't say that to anyone. I can't say tonight your life is going to be demanded of you. Only Jesus can say that. But equally, I can't say to you that it won't be demanded of you tonight. And I know that lots of lives in Wales will end today. The lives of young and old, rich and poor, chapel goers, atheists. None of us knows when that net will pull us out of the water. But it will come to that. And we will stand in front of God. And the whole of our lives are going to be, I can put it this way, replayed like a video recording of the whole of our lives. Things done in secret, things that were never verbalized. And at the end of it, God will say something like this. What's your plea? Look at the things you've just seen it all pack. You can see what you've done. What do you have to say for yourself? And for many people, there will be nothing they can say on that day. And so we're called to live life knowing we might stand in front of God before the day is out. That doesn't mean, well, I won't bother going shopping then, because, well, who knows if I'll still be here to eat that dinner tomorrow. No, we plan for the future, but we do it knowing we need to be prepared for when that day comes. Actually, we might not see Easter 2019. We might not go on that summer holiday we've got booked. And the big reason for asking this question is, are you ready? Are you ready now, today? Listen again to those verses in Ecclesiastes. Man does not know his time. Like fish taken in a cruel net, like birds caught in a snare, falls suddenly upon them. It's the suddenness we're meant to see here. Last week we looked at the two parables that come just before this one, that the pearl of great price and the parable of the hidden treasure. And one of the things we were saying last week is that the cost of the pearl is great, but so is the reward. The cost of following Jesus is real and significant, but you gain God himself, you gain the greatest treasure. Now in this parable, Jesus is building on that. Yes, there is a cost to buying the pearl, but there is a so much bigger cost if you don't buy the pearl. One of the first Christian martyrs was the Bishop of Smyrna, a man named Polycarp. And he was threatened for being Christian with being burned at the stake. But now, I want you to notice the perspective he had as he gave his response. You threaten with the fire that burns for an hour and in a little while is put out. For you do not know about the fire of the judgment to come and the fire of eternal punishment reserved for the ungodly. You see the perspective he's got there. He's comparing the cost of buying the pearl with the cost of not buying it. Yes, there's going to be for him that hour of fire, our momentary afflictions. And for all of us, there will be the suffering, the struggle of following Jesus. But Polycarp's saying that far rather that, and then the eternal glory to come, than the fire that never goes out. And seeing things that way, that's what Jesus wants to see. That he wants us to see that perspective on eternity. You know, Jesus spoke about hell more than anyone else in the Bible. And you know, he spoke about it more than he spoke about heaven. You ever wondered why? Why does Jesus do that? Is it because he likes talking about unpleasant or nasty things? No, of course not. Jesus is completely loving. But actually it's his love that drives him to talk about that subject. He spoke about it because he urgently wanted people to avoid that fate for themselves. Not a pleasant subject, I know. But something we have to think about out of love. And to ask that question, are you ready? Are you ready now? Well, I hope you can see, we'll draw things to a close now, how this parable is different from the parable of the wheat and the weeds. The wheat and the weeds is telling us why Jesus is delaying. It's for his glory. It's for the good of his people. We understand now why he's not come yet. But now this parable of the dragnet is telling us that that is no reason to delay putting our trust in Christ. One of the first things John the Baptist said when he started preaching was, "Flee from the wrath that is to come." That's the urgent message we have to share. Flee from the wrath to come. And it's wonderful, isn't it, that when we do that, we don't have to be like, imagine these fish in the net, desperately darting this way and that way, trying to find a hole in the net, trying to find an escape. Actually, when we run from the punishment of sin, we run towards someone. We run to Jesus Christ and we put our trust in him. And when we do that, we can be certain we are the just described in this parable. So in that day when that video was being played out and we're asked, "What is your plea?" We can quote that hymn, that great hymn. "My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. I dare not trust the sweetest frame, not my own, not someone else's. I'm not going to rely on anyone else, the best person I know. I wholly trust in Jesus' name." It's the response God will accept. That's what makes a person just. Are we ready? We can be confident that we are ready when we're putting our trust in Jesus Christ. Well, we're going to sing and then we're going to gather around the Lord's table. We're going to sing a hymn about this. It's number 528. It's a hymn that talks about that day of judgment that will come. and where we can run for safety. Let's stand and sing 5 to 8.